Well, it is easy for people to misinterpret or misunderstand Jesus' words and the meaning in that Bible story that we just read from the Gospel of John today, just as it is easy to misinterpret or misunderstand many Christian practices, even today. And this text that we just read from the Gospel of John, chapter 6, is a continuation of this theme. Have you heard it for the last several weeks? Have you been here? You're like, oh, we're still talking about that same theme. We're still talking about Jesus as the bread of life, the living bread that comes down from heaven. And as we look at this section of Scripture, what we see is that this is really an explanation of Holy Eucharist, of communion itself. And this explanation gets very, very clear, right? This bread is, in fact, Jesus' body, his flesh, as it says, that he has given for the life of the world. Now, Jesus was really misunderstood when he first, in this first discourse. If you keep reading this passage, you read that after he has this sermon, a bunch of people said, we're done. We're not following this guy anymore. And they left. It says that many followers stopped following Jesus that day. And then recall the fact that Christians in the early church were sometimes charged with cannibalism when they took communion out of obviously complete misunderstanding and ignorance, right? Jesus' body and blood, oh, those Christians, right? And it reminded me of this sort of misunderstanding. It reminds me of how often this occurs. I had some Christian missionaries that I met when I was in Thailand, and they had lived among a tribe in a remote part of South America. And one day, one of the tribal leaders asked the dad, this missionary dad, like, so why do you and your family worship a plant? A plant? You know, what he was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? He's very confused. And this leader says, oh, we've all seen you hold hands and bow down your heads to pray at the table to that plant in the middle of the table. You do it at every meal, you know. So, you see, without some more context, a little more information, right, misunderstandings can really occur, can happen. I don't know how they all sorted that out. I assume they did. But I want to say that because we also need some context. We need to remind ourselves today when we read this passage of what the context and purpose is of John's gospel here. Because he has a different goal than the other gospel writers. And he tells us what his goal is. He says this, these are written that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. You see, John's approach is different. He doesn't want to just give us an account of events of Jesus' life or an account of what Jesus said. His goal is to provide more of a theological treatise to help us understand Jesus' life and the events and his teachings. So that's why we get these kind of discourses that go on for a long time here in the Gospel of John. So he doesn't even recount the Last Supper story that I just talked to the kids about. It's not even in there. He assumes you already know that story. You know that thing that happened. I'm going to now tell you about what it means. And that's what he's doing here in this chapter. This is a theological explanation of the Last Supper, or as we would call it, Holy Eucharist, or Holy Communion, or Mass, or the Lord's Table, right? We have all these words for it, you know, Christians do this, you know. It doesn't matter what you call it, by the way. It's all good. We can, whatever word we use is fine. We know what we're talking about, hopefully. But the sad thing is, and this is true for everybody in the church throughout our history, we've often fought about these basic ideas, and we have fought about Eucharist itself. We've even, in our history, now I know this was a while back, but people have killed each other over the interpretation or understanding of the meaning of communion or Eucharist. I can't even imagine how that is the exact opposite for Jesus to look at people doing this. But I will say, one of the things that drew me to the Episcopal Church, to the Anglican Communion, was our approach and understanding of Holy Eucharist, of communion, because the Episcopal Church has never fallen into any trap, I would call it, of trying to explain exactly what it means in terms of communion. We don't use any big fancy words for it. We just say, in our tradition, Jesus is present in a mysterious way. And that is our formal position. What is our position? It's a mystery. You know, and I love that. I thought, wow, thank you. We're not going to fight about these words. And we also don't force anybody to have a specific understanding of communion either. Like, you're free to have your own beliefs about that in the Episcopal Church. There's no sort of uniform statement you have to adhere to, you know? And I just was so thrilled by this approach when I first encountered the Episcopal Church. Now, it was very contrasted for me to an experience I had in another church. It was a Protestant church. It's a little group of Protestants. I don't think there aren't any here in California, but I was in the Midwest at the time, and I went to this church, first time there, never been. And when I showed up, they informed me that if I wanted to have communion at that church, I had to fill out a card to confirm that I had shared their exact beliefs about communion before I could take it. So I read the card and I was like, I mean, close enough. We're good. Yeah, I want communion today. So that's why I'm here. You know, so I signed the card and I handed it back to the usher. And it was like this very odd, you know, experience for me. But apparently, my card didn't make it to the pastor, to the clergy in time, because when I went up for communion, at communion time, I went up to the altar rail and I knelt and I put up my hands, you know. And he looked at me and it was like, oh, I don't see your card. And he just went, no, and then passed me by. And I didn't get communion. And I was left literally empty-handed. Like, wow, I've just been refused communion. And I was stunned. And I, as I walked back to my seat, I was blinking away tears. Just that feeling of like being shunned in that moment. I had no idea how much it would hurt till I experienced that. Needless to say, I didn't go back there. But you know, I do respect and value all traditions. We have different approaches, and it is okay for different churches to have different approaches. So don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying I really like the fact that in this church, we don't do that. I love this, and I think that our approach is very much in line with what we're reading here in the gospel and Jesus' teachings on it. We proclaim in the Episcopal Church that the church does not own the Lord's table. The church doesn't own Jesus' body and blood. We are not the gatekeepers. It is not up to us to decide who can and who can't take communion. That altar, that table, it belongs to Jesus alone. And Jesus has invited all of us to receive. And you see that in John 6. He says, his life was given, and this bread of life is for, he says, the world. The whole world. So the whole world can benefit then from this sacrifice of Jesus as the bread of life. Now, I was once challenged by a kind of grumpy church member, not this church, grumpy church member after communion one Sunday, and she said to me, you know, why do the priests always have that eat the communion bread first? You know, after that Eucharistic prayer, she says, it really bothers me. It's so rude of you. You always eat it first, and you should be eating it last and be a good host. And I was kind of like, oh, goody, this is a teaching moment. And I said to her, you know, the reason why clergy eat the bread first is precisely to remind all of us that we're not the hosts of this meal. Jesus is. We, too, are just the guests at the meal with you, priests included. We're not pretending to be the host. What we do know and affirm, though, as Episcopalians, as Anglicans, is that Jesus is, as John 6 describes, somehow some way, really present in that bread and that wine of communion. Some might refer to this as a real presence, but it doesn't matter what word you use, because we just are happy to be a part of this wonderful, holy mystery. So our approach is a simple faith. It's just simple faith. Maybe it's even mystical. But I love that. I love that approach, that all are welcome, that Jesus is the one who invites you, that Jesus is the host. We are his guests, and he is gathering up the whole world to himself as the living bread that comes down from heaven and then meets us right here at this table in this simple bread and wine. Now, that's one of the reasons, if you didn't know, why the early church communed little children. In the early church, when an infant was baptized, they would receive their first communion right then. The priest would dip their finger in the wine and place it on the infant's lips. You know, we like to add more requirements to it. All of us do. But that isn't how it originally was used or understood. And I don't think it matters how well you understand it, because understanding isn't really the point. The Eucharist, just like baptism or any other sacrament, is just a gift of grace from God to you. It is about Jesus calling you, drawing you to himself. And all you have to do is respond to that loving call. Now, last year, I told one of my favorite stories about communion, and you might have heard it, so I'm going to repeat it. But there's a little addendum to this story that I want to share. So the story is this. This is a true story. It's about a 4-year-old boy who came to church, an Episcopal church, for the first time, and the priest didn't know who he was. Didn't know. I don't know if this kid's baptized. I don't know who these kids' parents are. I'm not going to give him communion. So he passed the kid, the little boy, by at the altar, who had his arm stretched for the bread, and he skipped him. And then as the priest continued on, the little boy yelled out loudly, "I want Jesus too!" And in that moment, the priest realizes he's wrong. That kid is right. He gets it better than he gets it. Maybe better than all the adults there get it. And so he went back and gave the little boy the bread of heaven, much to that little boy's joy and delight. Now, after I told that story last year, and I think I shared it with kids, Bishop Sandy Hampton was here with us, our beloved retired bishop who has just recently died. We've just recently buried him. But if you weren't here that day, because if you were, you probably heard it, at communion, right after I told that story, he yelled, "I want Jesus too!" And it just, I was like brought to almost tears to hear this bishop giving voice to the 4-year-old message, the desire, "I want Jesus too." My friends, you are all welcome at the Lord's table to receive this gift of Jesus' body and blood, the sacrifice that he made for us. And he's coming to us in this humble guise of bread and wine. And he is really present. He is really here in a mysterious way. And he invites you to come and eat if you want Jesus too. Thanks be to God.